afternoon, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to WOLB 1010 AM Talk Radio. This is Carol Mulletta of Team Radio Baltimore bringing you another edition of Parenting 411, where we share information parents need from sources they can trust. Before we go any further, I want to wish you a happy new year. I hope you have gotten off to a great start and are well on your way to making big things happen far beyond your wildest dreams in 2018. I want to share a bit of good news with you. As you know, I am co-founder and managing partner of Gardner Parenting Consultants. And for 9 years, that's in March, we will be marking 9 years, of reaching out to families, sharing our parenting philosophy with parents, caregivers, and organizations that serve children with the mission of helping them to reach their full potential and develop healthy in a very healthy way. And we just got the wonderful news that our parenting philosophy, the Gardner Parent Method, received its official trademark registration yesterday.
What have you done for your mother?
And that was just so gratifying because we've been sharing this philosophy, as I said, going on 9 years, and felt that we had a different way of looking at the parenting journey. But I have to say that it is the next level of awesome that the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office confirmed and said, indeed, yes, you're doing something that nobody else is doing. So I'm pretty excited about that. You can learn more about the Gardner Parent Method on our website at gardnerparenting.com. That's G-A-R-D-E-N-E-R parenting.com. We have information about our workshops and our classes, and also the Gardner Parent Method. We'll be making a few changes to showcase it a little differently now that we have this wonderful stamp of approval, but there still is plenty of information there for you to learn more about us. I have one upcoming event to tell you about that might help you on your way to enjoying 2018. It's an upcoming book talk showcasing Randy Bryant, who is the mastermind behind the dynamic culture and lifestyle blog Beatnik 24, and author of recently released, Never Says, 25 Phrases You Should Never Ever Say to Keep Your Job and Friends. You all enjoyed hearing from Randy back in June for our show entitled Looking Out for Number One, Parenting with Your Heart While Holding On to Your Soul. Never Says enlightens us about those awkward and sometimes offensive moments that can happen in the workplace or maybe even social settings when we're not sensitive to differences in cultural, racial, and gender perspectives, just to name a few. And if I know Randy, this book will be factual. She draws upon a wealth of experience as a corporate trainer in diversity and inclusion. Plus, she just keeps things real all the time. It will be interesting, and it will be humorous, not to diminish the seriousness of these challenges, but because sometimes you have to take the edge off when you're tackling difficult topics, and she is a funny lady for sure. It's all happening on January 21st at Bus Boys and Poets in D.C. at the 5th and K Street location from 5 to 6:30 p.m. That's 1025 5th Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 2001. So I hope you will check it out. I certainly plan to be there. Now I come to today's topic, financial literacy. Specifically, we're going to talk about how we can help kids make sense of dollars and cents. For many years, there's been a growing concern that teens and young adults are entering the real world without a real clue about many things, but most notably, how to manage their money. Many parents don't like to talk about money with their children, and some school systems are only now beginning to incorporate personal finance into their K-12 curriculum standards. But it is not implemented in anywhere close to a uniform manner. According to eSchool News, 45 states now include personal finance in their K-12 standards, which is an improvement from 17 states in 1998. However, even today, the Council for Economic Education reports that only 17 states require high school students to take a course in personal finance, a number that has not changed since 2014, And only 16 states require testing on knowledge of personal finance. So how serious is this? A 2012 study by the Paris-based Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development found that 1 in 6 U.S. teens fail to meet baseline proficiency in financial literacy. And this was a group of 30,000 teens from 18 countries. This places our teens in the middle of the pack, with Latvia just ahead and Russia right behind. So, what's the cost? Young people are making big money mistakes and credit scores are plummeting. Here to talk with me today about how they are chipping away at this problem are Chuchi Arevalo, CEO and founder of Spark Business Academy, and Jean-Jacques Bourneau, private wealth advisor and CEO and founder of 1787 FP. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hello.
And Chuchi, I'd like to start with you. Tell us about your professional background and how you came up with the idea for Spark Business Academy.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, Carol, thank you for having me on your show. Really appreciate the opportunity to speak about this important topic. And happy New Year to you, and congratulations on the great news and your continued success helping families. That's great news.
Thank you.
So I'll tell you a little bit about myself first. I grew up in Spain. I went to college in London, studied economics. I got my MBA at Georgetown in finance, and then I worked at business and finance at PricewaterhouseCoopers, PwC, for about 17 years before I founded Spark Business Academy about 3.5 years ago.
Okay. Okay, and what motivated you to start Spark Business Academy?
Well, all the things that you just discussed. Over the course of my career, I realized that I see this as a hidden crisis, the lack of financial literacy in general in society. Mm-hmm. And my thought was that just like learning how to play a sport or how to play an instrument or how to learn a foreign language, the younger you start, the better. So I had a lot of experience working with kids as a coach and, you know, instructor and other capacities. And I decided to combine my expertise in business and finance with my passion for working with kids. So mm-hmm. that's how I came up with the idea of Spark Business Academy, to basically empower the next generation of adults with the skills that they're really not learning in school, but they're really going to need sooner rather than later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I would really love to see you in action, because I know firsthand about your passion working with kids in other settings like sports and coaching like that. So who do you serve and where are your clients located?
So we're based in Arlington, Virginia, and we serve basically the entire Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. We work with primarily in Washington, D.C., Arlington, Alexandria, Fairfax, Loudoun County, and in Maryland, Montgomery County. We're growing pretty rapidly in Montgomery County as well. And we're hoping that we'll come to, you know, Baltimore and other areas surrounding the D.C. area as we expand our programs a little further out as well.
Okay, and I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to Parenting 411 on WOLB 1010 AM. If you would like to call in, if you have questions for either of the guests or myself, you can call 410-481-1010, 410-481-1010. Right now, we're talking to Mr. Chuchi Arevalo of Spark Business Academy. And if you'd like to learn more about his organization, even as we're talking, take a look at his website at Spark Business Academy. That's all one word, no underscores, .com. So sparkbusinessacademy.com. Now, how do kids access your programs? Is it, do they sign up individually? Must they work through a school or a community organization?
Sure. So there's a variety of options. Just to follow up, besides the Washington, D.C. area, we also have a strong presence in the New York City area as well, mm-hmm. and working with a lot of institutions in Manhattan and Brooklyn. And in terms of how families and children can access our programs, We partner with a lot of schools. That's our primary base. We partner with the schools, and we bring our programs as part of their after-school program. Sometimes we do, during school workshops. We've done entire full-day project days where we spend a whole day with a class of, say, fifth graders and speak about entrepreneurship and do a lot of project-based learning for an entire day. So there's a lot of different options, but I would say primarily through the schools themselves. We work with some of the top schools in the area and the country, where we go to the schools and the we bring our programs. Could be like a weekly after school class, for example, and children sign up through either through the school or through us. That's one venue. We work with other organizations in addition to the schools. For example, we do a lot of work with Girl Scouts groups.
Okay.
Girl Scouts, they need to earn their financial literacy badges, and we, from all the way from daisies to ambassadors, and we deliver and provide some of these workshops so that the girls can earn their badges through a number of activities as well. We also try to reach out to folks through community centers and rec centers, and we do a lot of that in Fairfax County as well as through the public library system. And in Montgomery County, we've run a couple of successful programs for the county through their public libraries as well. So we're trying to really expand to more ways that families and children can access our programs. And of course, one of the things that we're doing and we're very excited about is the growing popularity of our summer camps,
mm-hmm.
where we have full week, full day camps on entrepreneurship, investing, personal finance, business leadership. And those have been very popular, again, primarily in the Washington, D.C. area and New York.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we team up with some schools in the country, like, we meet up with National Cathedral School or the Potomac School or some other schools to offer their programs there as well. So, but like you said, we try to expand to more areas and more families. And we've even had situations where a mom has got us to come and deliver a weekly class for 8 weeks in their basement, and because we didn't have the particular program at their school, but she really wanted to get her kids and some neighbors' kids involved with the program. So we actually went to her house and delivered a program for 8 to 10 weeks there, which was kind of unusual, but we're willing to be flexible in order to reach out as many kids as possible.
Wow, that sounds great. Now, your primary focus is children, but you also work with young adults. So where are the biggest knowledge gaps for this group in your experience?
So we are doing more work in the area of financial wellness.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, work with trying to design programs for law firms for their summer associates, where they come in and they do a lot of training in the summer. And we just do like a 2 or 3 hour workshop as part of their summer associate program, just to again empower these young folks with some skills that they may not have necessarily learned in law school or before that, to sort of manage their money and thinking about investing and things of that nature. So I think that one of the biggest gaps that I see for this sort of younger generation of so-called millennials is probably a couple of things. One, I think the basic budgeting skills that I think those are becoming more and more important, and so particularly when they're loaded with a lot of debt,
mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's just hard to manage that. And the second thing to me, which is very important, is the whole concept of investing. And I think millennials tend to be a little bit risk averse, and when it comes to investing, and when they're young, that's really the time that they need to be taking more risks.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking about investing in the stock market, mutual funds, and chasing the higher returns in order to be able to meet their long-term financial goals.
Okay. Now, what have you accomplished with Spark Academy that you're most proud of?
Well, that's a great question. So we've worked with a lot of kids over the years and families, and parents sometimes come in and they ask half jokingly, "Can I sit in the class, or do you have a class for parents?"
Mm.
And that's very exciting to me. Now, what to me what drives me, what makes me feel the most proud, is when I get just a random email or phone call from a parent and tells me something that really had an impact on their kid. Like, for example, we run a junior CEOs program in Montgomery County a few months ago, and one of the female participants who attended, and we're talking like 9-10 years old, the next day apparently she woke up and the first thing she told to her mom is, when I will grow up, I want to be a CEO. And being able to have a little bit of that impact and empower the kids with the thought that they can do these things, that's really what drives me. Also, we get a lot of feedback from parents that normally at dinner time, normally they speak about sports and other things with their kids, but after taking our programs, now they're talking more about entrepreneurship with stocks they should invest in. And I think also we're trying to do that and be a resource for parents so that when the kids get home, the conversation can continue and parents can reinforce some of the things that we're working with their kids so that it sticks.
Right, right. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. And it really is fulfilling when you get that feedback, because a lot of times in life when things go well and when we have a good experience and things kind of go the way we had hoped, we forget to reach back and tell someone about it. Whereas when things don't go well, don't go as we expected, we're very quick to complain or something like that. So it can be really nice when people take that little effort just to let you know that you had an impact on them. I know I've experienced that as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think having that impact on the kids is really what drives us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, John, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you so much, Carol, for having me today. It's an honor to be here on the show. And congratulations on getting the patent done. It definitely shows the work that you've been putting in.
Thank you. Thank you. And so I want to remind our listeners that John Bourneau has joined us as well. And he is a private wealth advisor with Private Wealth CFOs. And he is also CEO and founder of 1787 FP. And that's what we're going to talk a lot about today. But just to give our listeners a little bit of understanding about your background and the expertise that you bring to 1787, tell us about your work as a private wealth advisor.
Sure. Yes. You know, I've had the good fortune to work in the financial services space for over 15 years and really got started on that journey working at two of the premier firms, Merrill Lynch and Morgan Stanley. And when I worked at those firms, one of the things that they did really well was target and service clients that had $1 million or more of investment.
Okay.
But one of the things that I found is that in my circles, the people that I would bump into that were just coming out of law school, just getting their MBA or just coming out of engineering, didn't have anywhere close to $1 million of investment, but they had pretty good incomes, and with the right coaching, they could build sizable portfolios over time. So I really tried to figure out how can we solve this problem to be able to make finances available for the everyday investor and for that next generation of wealthy clients. And after I got my certified financial planner license and I attended the Darden Business School for my MBA, I launched 1787FP, really to democratize financial planning and investments to really give the everyday investor the same tools that the wealthy and affluent have used for years to be able to build their wealth.
Okay, and how long has 1787FP been around?
It's been around for 2 years now. We launched it out of the Innovation Lab at the University of Virginia 2 years ago. And for those of you that are not familiar with the iLab, the Innovation Lab works with entrepreneurs within the university that want to start a company, that can use mentorship to really get this business started off the ground. And that was definitely a great start for us.
Okay. Well, so tell us, what is 1787FP?
Sure. So really the name 1787 comes from really the United States. And I'm a big fan of the United States history. Mm-hmm. And in 1787 was the year that the Constitution was drafted in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we take a look at 200 plus years later, United States is arguably the most successful startup, starting from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of states came together to form a country. And today we stand as a beacon for hope maybe not so much right now, but traditionally we have been a beacon for hope for the whole world. And the FP part, we really wanted to have to distinguish what we do, which is financial planning. And that's a little bit different than some of our competitors that have tools to help you invest. You can see how much you invested. But I think the reason why you're investing has been left out. And that's the part that we think that we're going to be pretty special at.
Okay. And so now 1787 FP is an app, right? Is that the name of the app as well you have created?
That's correct. That's correct. So that's the app that we're going to have. So right now the app is in the beta form.
Okay.
And it's a controlled beta where we're testing it with users. And we're getting ready to be able to release it, and it'll be coming out first to the Apple App Store, and then it'll be made available on the Android platform.
Okay. And so how many people are you working with in this stage?
Yeah, so right now we've had a couple of hundred people that have signed up for the first version of the beta.
Okay.
And once we release it, we'll be able to sit back and watch. But we think that we're going to be able to have an impact on anyone that really wants to take control of their finances and save more money. We think that we'll have some tools to really be able to make that easy for them.
Okay. And so what have they been saying about it?
Well, we've been getting pretty good feedback. Some of the feedback that we've received is that we have a lot of people that have been using some of the newer technologies, like, for example, Mint.com. But what we found and the feedback that we're getting is that people are actually going to a lot of different websites, whether they're going to something to track their finances and look at their expenses. They're using another tool to be able to invest through software. They're going on to another website to be able to check their credit. They're checking their 401k. They're checking their car loans and student loans. And by the time it's all said and done, they probably have a pretty big headache. So we really want to simplify that process and really be able to make it easy on one unified platform.
Okay. And have they talked about feeling, I was just wondering if they kind of feel a little more confident now about their go ahead.
I think so because, you know, it's one way to really kind of consolidate and streamline what a person's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with that extra time that they have, they can spend more time with their friends and they can spend more time with their family.
Yeah. 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 Okay. Well, now, you know, let's just talk about this thing. I mean, how did we get here? I mean, I at the top of the show, I had some statistics that, you know, talk about how, you know, our teens just don't have the financial savvy. But, and you know, and I also talked about how not all schools have incorporated financial literacy into their curricula. However, it's not like we used to, like as a country, we had all this stuff and then we stopped all of a sudden and this is the result. It's not that way. I mean, you know, previous generations kind of looked at money a little differently and there just wasn't kind of this this problem of making the poor decisions and running up debt and things like that. So how do we get here then?
So I'll give you my 2 cents, Carol, on this. I think part of it is probably what you mentioned before. Schools are very focused on math, science, English, history, and standardized testing.
Mm-hmm.
So they haven't really been fast enough to adjust to the, you know, what the population really needs, which is also some of this financial literacy education. And I think equally as important, and I think you alluded to this earlier, is the fact that this is a taboo subject at most homes. Parents just don't talk about money with their kids, so that doesn't help. If you don't learn in school and you don't learn it at home, well, how are you going to learn it? So what we're saying is many super bright students getting straight A's in school, you know, going to great schools, you know, they go to college and beyond, and, you know, they can balance a checkbook. They get into credit card trouble pretty quickly. They don't understand about the concept of investing and how they should start early.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those are really two of the culprits that I think would explain most of the results that you're seeing. And we're seeing that over time, baby boomers, in terms of financial literacy tests and studies that have been done, baby boomers have scored better than Gen Xers, who have scored better than millennials. So it's a little bit of a growing trend from that perspective.
Right. And John, what were you going to say?
I would agree with that as well. And, you know, one of the things with the schools, they are challenged. They have limited resources. Their budgets are being cut. And this is not something that's going to be on top of their list, but it's something that's actually pretty important. You know, if you take a look at, you need to get a driver's license to be able to drive a car, it might make sense to be able to have some type of testing to teach young people about personal finance. Mm-hmm. And I think some of the things that we can also do is use some of the everyday companies that they use every day, whether that's the Apple iPhone or whether it's Google to do their search or whether it's Netflix to watch their movies or Amazon to be able to buy gifts. There are a lot of these companies that we can actually introduce them into, get them shares in these companies. Mm-hmm. They can start reading the annual reports. They might not understand at the beginning, but over time, they can build up their business acumen and start understanding what does it mean to invest, so that if you invest a dollar today, hopefully you're going to get $1.40 or $1.50 in the future.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm just trying to, because, you know, you mentioned something, Chuchi, talking about how baby boomers had a better handle on this, and then it's just kind of been this spiral going down. And so I just wonder, is it... Because it's not resources, because it's not like we grew up with a bunch of financial literacy courses and things like that all around us. But there's, you know, there is just this difference. And I'm just wondering, is it the culture of the materialistic culture, you know, that these, you know, that the children in these generations, Gen X, millennials, whatever, have grown up with, or their access to things? Is that accounting for it, you know, coupled with, you know, parents not talking about it, or and compounded by schools not supporting it? I'm just wondering. There just seems to be something there.
And I would also add, you know, that we're, you know, we all want the best for our children, but mm-hmm. sometimes we take that too far and we spoil them sometimes. And maybe this has been getting kind of worse over the years, where mm-hmm. we've been very overprotective parents and helicopter parents, really wanting the best for their children and giving them everything. And sometimes that goes a little too far. And, you know, I think the tool of the allowances, I think, is a great tool.
Yes.
That parents can introduce at an early age
mm-hmm.
to really teach some lessons. And I, you know, spoken to a number of PTA meetings and school parent meetings, and we had great conversations about how effectively parents can use allowances to mm-hmm. really start teaching kids about money and giving them, transferring some of that decision-making and responsibility to the kids,
mm-hmm.
even at a very young age. So
right.
To me, that's one tool that parents are probably not utilizing as much. We're used to being ATMs to our kids. You know, they want something, we give them the money. And mm-hmm. there's no notion of money being exchanged. And today, with everything being electronically, I'm getting things on Amazon and PayPal, kids don't even see money being exchanged when you're buying something. So they just really think that, you know, these things just appear for no reason, and they don't really understand how the payment process works. So I think allowances can go a long way to help with that problem.
I agree with that, too. And especially if parents can, because you alluded to this, about step back and not try to control all of it. I mean, certainly they can help children budget and develop a plan for how much they're going to save, if they're going to contribute to charity, and what they can spend, have at their disposal to spend. But what parents can sometimes have a hard time doing is watching their children make some poor decisions. But it might be
sure.
worth it so that they can see what happens. You know, if they spend money here, they're not going to have money to go with their friends to do something. And, you know, to allow them, while the stakes are low, to see the impact of
exactly
of their
that's
decisions.
Exactly what we always talk about, you know, mm-hmm. with parents, and it's a great conversation. And you're right, sometimes you mean well, but then parents end up bailing them out. They bail the kids out, which is the worst you can do. So you give them, well, if you get maybe $10 a week or whatever your allowance is, they mm-hmm. spend it somewhere, and then they want to go with their friends and they want to buy something else, and mm-hmm. then they, you know, they tell their parents, they give them the sob story, and then parents end up, you know, giving them more money. So that it's a little bit of a moral hazard problem as well. So I think you, like you said, I think you have to let them make mistakes when the stakes are low, and that's how they're going to learn from that experience.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
So, yes, John.
Oh, Sure. I was going to add, I think the both of you made some great points there. Some of the things that we can also do is when they do get the allowance is actually teaching just some basic principles like give away 10%, save 10%, and then live off the rest, that 80%. And if they can employ those simple principles, that can go a long way towards building that discipline and saving later on.
Right. And so John, then, at what age do you think parents should be teaching children about money, and how should they introduce it?
Well, I'd probably say somewhere around age 7 or older, when maybe they might do a couple of chores around the house and they can earn an allowance. That might be a good time to start introducing it to them. Mm-hmm. And then just teaching them those principles that they have to give away a certain percentage, save a certain percentage, and kind of like live off the rest. And then delayed gratification. You know, you might want something. You're not able to get everything that you want today. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it takes a little work in order to be able to do that and start teaching them those things. Because sometimes I think when we look at TV today, we look at a lot of the glitz and glamour and the celebrities, and we see things happen really fast, and sometimes it takes time.
Right, right. And I want to remind our listeners that you're tuned in to Parenting 411 on WOLB 1010 AM Talk Radio. And we're talking about helping kids make sense of dollars and cents, or how to help them get financial literacy. So I am talking to Chuchi Aravalo of Spark Business Academy and Jean Bourneau of 1787 FP. And I neglected to mention the website earlier. You can learn more about it as we're speaking at 1787, that's 1787fp.co. Okay, so gentlemen, how informed were you about finance when you were growing up? Chuchi, how about you?
I would say, you know, average. I was pretty entrepreneurial growing up. I always was cutting neighbors' lawn, so, you know, doing any sort of yard work that I could to earn a few bucks here and there. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of continued that with, you know, with my kids. I think this is another area where we can help, you know, families getting kids more informed with, more involved with, you know, basically working at an early age. But I would say on average, you know, I didn't learn the ins and outs of finance until, you know, probably college, which is what most people experience. So, you know, in high school, I don't recall spending a lot of time on business and finance. And then in college, I started economics. Obviously, that changed a little bit. But to me, that's, you know, I've always had a little bit of an entrepreneurial bug. And I was able to do a little bit of that, just kind of working odd jobs here and there as a kid. Which I think is something that kids need to do more of these days.
Right. Now, how about you, John?
Yeah, for myself, I pretty much got probably the basic learnings in college. Like growing up, it wasn't really something discussed in our household. But I did have some jobs, odd jobs growing up, where I'd either be cutting neighbors' grass or doing door-to-door sales when I was in high school. So I've always had some type of job that I did throughout, and I also worked when I was in college as well.
Now, door-to-door sales, what kind of stuff were you selling?
Cable, TV.
Oh, were you? In high school, you were?
I was in high school.
Oh, okay. Okay, so how was that pretty lucrative for you, or what?
It was pretty good for me as a high school student. You know, I got a pretty handsome commission, and so it was pretty fun.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, do you have children, John, or nieces and nephews?
I do. I have two children. Okay. My daughter just turned 12, and my son is 9.
Okay. So how are you putting your ideas into practice with them?
So a lot of the principles that we talked about as far as the allowance, getting them when we go to church, if they do their tithes there, getting them to save if they want to get something that we save up for it, and then we take them out to go get it later on. And then really try to talk to them about cool technologies that are happening now. So, you know, if I see an article about Tesla and their truck, I'll talk to them about that and how great of a company it is. Or Apple, and, you know, we're buying this iPhone now. Do you know how much money did they make on it? So try to teach them those principles and really showing them the savings is important, but some of the skills I think that they need in the future is really being good at math. And I think that's one of the things that all children can really elevate that level is really being good at math.
And that's the approach that some schools are taking as well. They're incorporating the financial concepts into the math instruction. They may not have a particular, some schools may not have a particular financial literacy course or academy, so to speak, but they're incorporating it into to math lessons, which, you know, is certainly a good start. Now, speaking of schools, now I'll ask you, Chuchi, if you were to design an in-school elementary curriculum, what are four areas that you'd want it to address if you wanted to create a financial literacy curriculum for, say, the elementary school level?
So one, that's a great question, and we've done a little bit of work with some schools on this. I think the first one to me would have to be some basic budgeting skills. It's just going to be, no matter what the kids end up doing, they're going to become, you know, doctors or, you know, teachers, whatever. They're going to follow different paths to success, but they're all going to need how to budget their money. So I think basic budgeting skills has to be there. I think entrepreneurship is a concept that I think needs to be emphasized at a much younger age. We start with our entrepreneurship programs as early as kindergarten. This is something that I feel very strongly about. Even with my own kids, I try to show them about how to become entrepreneurs, and you know, they were able to set up a tennis lesson business when they were in seventh grade and fourth grade, and you know, they were giving tennis lessons to a bunch of kids in the neighborhood, and that has, they continue to do that over the years, which worked really well for them.
Oh,
so I think that you never know where the next Steve Jobs is going to come from, so I think we need to foster a little bit of that environment.
Mm-hmm.
So entrepreneurship to me is very important. And it's not something that, you know, we're teaching kids until probably, you know, I would say late high school or even college.
Right.
And then after that, I would say the concept of debt. Mm-hmm. And what it really means to use a credit card, and you know, and as kids get older, you can talk about FICO scores and how, you know, they can affect a lot of decisions later on. And then lastly, if I have to choose another one, I would just talk about the sort of the need to emphasize savings. You know, we live mm-hmm. in a society that glamorizes spending and spending, spending, spending. Go to the mall and spend, 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 and buy things that you don't really need. And I think we need to exalt the, you know, really highlight the virtues of saving. And as the kids get older, how that really translates into investing and meeting long-term financial goals.
Okay. Okay, John, how about you? What would you think?
Yeah, I think I would agree with what the both of you are saying. This is a conversation that my wife and I have all the time. And I think that foundation would be really entrepreneurship, and what does entrepreneurship mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think also really being skilled at math. I think this is a subject that we can all elevate, and math and then science. And I think what that does is that it gives you the opportunity later on to get in some of these science-type courses like computer science, so that if you see a problem, you can actually build something to solve it. And, you know, I'm kind of like reminded of like Uber. The CEO, Travis, the way that they came up with the idea for Uber is that he was in Paris and he was trying to hail down a taxi.
Okay.
And they were doing it for like 5 hours.
Mm.
And then he was like, you know, wouldn't it be cool if we could just have an app that we could just call a black car and that would come pick us up. And, you know, a lot of people thought the idea was nuts, but now we've got millions of people all across the world that's using their software, and they're actually able to create something to be able to build that. And so that's why I really kind of see the math, the science, the entrepreneurship, and then also learning how to save and be able to build wealth over time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, you know, there's definitely some evidence that the efforts of those schools and those states that have really gotten serious about this, that it is having an effect on not only the students at the time, but then when they become young adults. Because I've another study that I looked at has found that there were noted improvements in credit outcomes for 18 to 22 year olds in three states. That's Idaho, Georgia, and Texas. And this is where financial education mandates are pretty rigorous, as evaluated by the Council for Economic Education. And so, you know, what they found was that by taking that time, credit scores across the state even were impacted. In Georgia, the credit scores jumped nearly 11 points compared to average credit scores prior to the mandate that the state had instituted, and that young adults in Idaho increased their credit scores by 16 points, and in Texas, they increased by 32 points. And so so there's definitely a benefit to investing investing this time in the children at an early age. I mean, it can kind of affect the resources of the state even. I mean, because if people are making poor money decisions and you know, they may, if they lose their jobs or just have something horrific happen to them, and then they need state services or things like that. You want to have people that are doing well financially that can, you know, drive your economy within your state and obviously within the country. So it sounds like it's certainly well worth their investment to do this, to take time to teach children this. So now, let's see, in middle school and high school, do things change a little bit about what you need to focus on?
I think that as the children get older, their concept of money, probably they're able to understand it a lot better. And then that's probably a better time to start just showing them the principles that we talked about, that if you take in a certain amount and putting away a certain amount as far as savings, and teaching them some concepts like compound interest and how that works for you over time, and how interest works against you when you have debt. And one of the things that we should probably talk to the children about is delaying getting credit cards as long as possible until you start actually getting an income. You probably have seen a lot of the college campuses, they would have credit card offers all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably like one of the worst things, is for a freshman to have 5 credit cards with no income for at least 4 years from now. Mm-hmm. They might need at most maybe one credit card that they share with their parents. And that way they can really get control of their credit score, because we really don't want to start down a negative path before they even get started with their careers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How about you, Chuchi? Would you change or add anything at the middle school and high school level?
So what we're seeing is that like Jen mentioned, in my middle school and high school, the kids have more math skills, and they're they have a little more schooling, so you can go a little bit deeper into some of these concepts.
Mm-hmm.
What we do for our programs is that we may follow a particular theme, like say entrepreneurship or personal finance, and what we may study in kindergarten, and we may be talking about things like, you know, coins, dimes, dollars, cents, nickels, etc. Then as the kids get older, then we can get more specific, and we talk about with our middle school programs, we actually talk about FICO scores and what determines the FICO score and how that helps you, and what's a good FICO score and what's a bad FICO score. So, as early as middle school, you can get into pretty sophisticated concepts. We've introduced the concept of options when we're talking about investing in the stock market, and the kids, they have the math and the skill set to really absorb that.
Mm-hmm.
A few weeks ago, I was in New York City. We're hosting our first inaugural entrepreneurship competition, which involved three of the top schools in New York, Dalton, Avenue, and Le Mans. And it was a great event. You know, we're talking like, you know, 11, 12-year-olds doing a little bit of a kind of a Shark Tank type of competition where they had spent a semester working on their business ideas. And then this was sort of the showcase culmination where they were developing, you know, they had their website and their PowerPoint presentation. And, you know, this is something that is amazing, just to see, you know, 11, 12-year-old kids having this level of understanding of this concept. So I think you can really do a lot when you get to middle school, and obviously high school, you can do even more.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, what you just described sounded very similar to Bill DC. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. I can maybe talk to you about that offline, but that is another program in the Washington, D.C. area that works with high school students and helping them to launch their businesses. And, you know, I had the privilege of attending their gala this past year. And, you know, part of it was to go around to, there was this large room with all of them with their displays and just so many very interesting ideas. And so, you know, a little knowledge about financing and all of that to help them understand how to grow their businesses and all of that would probably really be amazing for them.
I agree. And one real challenge that we're seeing is that, you know, like we talked about earlier, the schools, their hands are tied a little bit in a way, because there's only certain, the curriculum is jam-packed with, you know, math, science, and, you know, there's just not too much time during the day to expand to more subjects. And they're focusing correctly, you know, math, science, and very important topics. So, but what we're seeing very successful is, when we come in and do these programs as part of the school's after-school program, where, you know, kids may be doing like chess or, you know, robotics or other things, we come in and teach our classes as part of this program. Mm-hmm. And that's one area of schools that we're seeing incredible amounts of learning taking place in those after-hour class, those sort of after-school hours between 3:30 and 5:30. Mm-hmm. You know, some kids do go home and take the bus, which is fine, but I think, you know, in just an extra hour, an hour and a half, there's a lot of learning that we're seeing with what I call sort of life skills. Mm-hmm, and so that works really well for the elementary schools from kindergarten through fifth and sixth grade. But we're seeing sometimes the middle school and high school, obviously you don't have those programs because partly the, you know, kids are old enough, they can go home by themselves, and parents don't need, like, you know, a program to take their kids for a couple of extra hours if they're working. But what we're seeing now is an increasing number of middle schools kind of reverting back and implementing this type of sort of professional grade after-school program where we come in and run these classes. And that is working really, really well in some schools in the D.C. area and New York City, because then you can get into this sort of doing entrepreneurship competitions, you know, classes on the stock market and, mm-hmm. You know, our junior CEOs program. And that works great for the middle schools in particular.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now,
so hopefully we'll see a little bit more of that with middle schools adopting those type of programs. Otherwise, you know, obviously we have things like our summer camps and other programs in the community centers, the rec centers that, you know, folks can access outside of the school as well.
Mm-hmm. So what's next for Spark Business Academy then?
Well, it's funny you mentioned Texas, because that's sort of our next area that we want to expand to. Obviously, we have a lot within the East Coast. We had a lot of our programs were featured in the Business Week last year, and they got picked up by, you know, Bloomberg TV and even international newspapers. So throughout that, when we're getting all that press coverage, we're getting a lot of requests for our programs pretty much all across the country. So now we're sort of prioritizing our sort of phase two of expansion, which will include East Coast areas like Philadelphia, mm-hmm. Connecticut, and then in the South, primarily Texas. So that's going to be the plan for the next year and a half.
Okay. I might know some people down there that you might want to talk to about that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, okay. So, John, how about you? What's next for 1787 FP?
Sure. So I really kind of take a look at the next phase for us, really broken down into thirds. One part is going to really be the building. The second part is going to be the testing. Mm-hmm. And the third part would be the growing. So right now we are building our product out. After we have built the software, we want to get in the customer's hands and test it. Get feedback from them and how we can improve. And then from there, actually go to market and really try to grow and become an enduring financial services company.
Okay. And do you, because I know initially where you saw this need was kind of young professionals. So do you envision maybe kind of making it accessible to younger, you know, over the long term, somehow tapping into the younger market with your app?
Yeah, I definitely think there's going to be some opportunities for that. Well, the app is going to be for free, so it'll be something that everyone can use.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, for example, if a person is in high school and they were to put their parents' American Express on there, they can kind of analyze the spending that they have. So I think they'll find a lot of benefit in some of those tools. And maybe down the road, we can have something that we work with their parents to be able to make it easier for them to be able to save. But the first version of the product is going to be for the people that are really coming out of college. And then I guess mm-hmm. the next step is to partner to see how we can help younger people take control of their finances.
Wow. Well, I tell you, both of you have a lot of exciting things coming up. I really admire what you're doing now and the impact, the potential impact that you can have on young people and really giving them a good foundation for financial stability later in life. And I thank you.
Absolutely.
Yes, yes. And I definitely thank you all for joining me. And for our listeners, as always, I encourage you to take a look at my website, carolmaletta.com. That gives you an idea of things that I'm doing with the show, Parenting 411, also with Gardner Parenting Consultants, and just other projects I have coming up. I enjoy hearing from you. Some of you have reached out to me also on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can look up the Parenting 411, and I encourage you to follow me and keep up and send in your show ideas as well. This show is really for you, and I look forward to continuing to share information that you can use. So thank you for tuning in, and that's all we have for today.
Thank you for having me, Carol.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Feel so good, don't be